Sippers, welcome to this episode of the Tea With Me podcast with me, Shane Todd. Before we get going and get into this episode, I need to plug a few things. Number one is our Patreon, the Tea With Me Patreon. You become an official Sipper, you go over there. We've got our bonus episodes. We've got live stream episodes every Friday. Mysteries episodes go out there before anywhere else. These actual Tea With Me episodes goes out a day early. Stars in Your Eyes is just up there. The live show that we did in front of 800 people. In the limelight, your favourite comedian singing. What else, Dan?
Millionaire.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire's on there.
You versus Kieran Tennis.
Me versus Kieran in a tennis competition. It's all hot, plus you can go back. There's no expiry date in this stuff. You can go back and watch it all. Patreon.com/TeaWithMePodcast. Also, I have just kind of nearly finished this current tour. I've got 3 shows left in Europe. Copenhagen, Oslo, and Amsterdam. And a lot of people are going, Shane, I thought that was a 10-day tour. Well, so did I, but we have decided to streamline, no excuses, we've streamlined, we're focusing on these 3 shows. The other 7, they said, look, we've sold 7 tickets, I said no, haven't sold well enough, so we've just got 3 left on sale that are selling all right, so I'm doing them. You can get tickets for those, shanetalkcomedy.com, then the next tour, which will be the Full House show, SSC Arena, 9th of November, my biggest ever show, 8,000 people or something in the SSC. I think there's about 1,000 tickets left for that. ShaneTalkComedy.com. Mysteries Live, will that already have happened by the time we do this?
Yeah.
It was great, wasn't it? It was so much fun. What a show that was.
Yeah.
Kieran got his top off. We kissed. It was a brilliant time. We'll probably do another Mysteries Live off the back of this. Before we get into this episode, we are sponsored by none other than Manscaped, the number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Did you guys know, I did a bit of research when I was in Australia, because I was bored, and I had to do a Manscaped read for the episode we recorded in Australia, but in Sierra Leone, for like 10 years or something, in the 1970s, say all these people proclaimed themselves as like the king, to settle it. It was the man with the longest pubes. What do you think of that?
I mean, that's almost an anti-Manscaped read, but
well,
sure.
And also, I made it up. None of that's true at all. But Manscaped, what is true is Manscaped's the number one in men's below the belt grooming. These guys have it all these products behind us. Me and William Thompson took every single Manscaped product with us when we were in Australia, and we used every single one in the privacy of our hotel room. They've got everything.
Such as
the ball cleanser. I cleansed his balls for him. He toned mine. The lawnmower 5.0 with wireless charging technology. Did we light on that, Dan, is there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because weird thing about that, fun fact about Dan, will only groom himself in the dark. And just has that wee torch on. Manscaped have everything. Manscaped.com. Use code Tea With Me for 20% off and free shipping. The link's in the description. Last read, we're also sponsored by NordVPN. Dan, take that off the screen for me. I don't need it. NordVPN. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. And that's a tool that safeguards your internet connection and enhances your online privacy. Of course, when I was in Australia, don't think I wasn't in my hotel room. Door locked, do not disturb, sign on, trying to watch Irish League highlights. But I couldn't, because BBC iPlayer said you're not within the right territory. That's when I flicked on my NordVPN button and told them I am at home. We've tricked them. I hid my IP address and I was able to watch highlights of Cliftonville versus Linfield in the privacy of my hotel room. This thing is great. You continually enhance your browsing experience. It's smooth like Manscaped. This is the NordVPN's the internet equivalent of Manscaped. It makes your internet experience smoother while refraining from tracking your online actions. Thank God. You can grab an exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/teawithme to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan. Every purchase of 2-year plan receives 4-month bonus on top. My guest this week, let's get into it. My guest this week is someone I've been a fan of for a long time. Someone I've watched for a long time because we'll talk about it. But the show that you were part of,
yes.
I am a super fan. I'm not going to play it
sure,
cool.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Super fan.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm delighted to have you here. People will know your Instagram page, Three Bucks Left.
Yeah.
And whether it's from the Hardy Box, your live shows, or anything like that, you've got a distinctive beard.
I have a distinctive beard, and people think that I have this beard out of choice. I literally just haven't time to shave.
All right, I thought you were going to say, like, you're made to have it. Like, people are coming up to you, you fucking don't shave
that
beard.
I cannot wait to shave it.
Right, okay. It's impressive.
It is.
Did you grow the beard for Hardy Bucks or anything like that? Or
no, I grew the beard when I ran from Dublin to Mayo. I said I wouldn't shave until I finished the run, and then I just fell in love with it.
You ran from Dublin to Mayo?
I did. I ran from Dublin to Mayo.
Were you the original Forrest Gump?
Getting there, yeah. And then where, I ran. That was my it? Shortest run of the ultramarathons that I did.
Really?
Yeah.
How far is Dublin to Mayo?
Dublin to Mayo is only 233 or 4K.
How long
But you have to come down. You have to come down the old way because you can't come down. You can't run on a motorway, obviously.
Right.
So
that's intense, isn't it? Like the idea of someone running on the hard shoulder.
Yeah.
So how long did that take?
It took 3 days. 93K was the first day. 93K the first day.
Continuous running.
Continuous running. Yeah. Well, we took a break halfway. An hour break.
Myself
and French Touch.
Yeah. Seriously.
2019. Yeah. I had an aneurysm in 2016.
What brings that on, or like what?
Just as it happened, it was the fittest day I ever was in my life. I was just after running my first 10K race, and I had an aneurysm that night. But three and a half years earlier, I had a heart attack, and that's what got me into the fitness. And I should have died twice. In fact, I should have died three times, which I always bring up in my own podcast. It's a bit of a running joke that I always get a plug in that I nearly died three times.
And it literally is a running joke.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Yeah. So what, like, what, by the way, we're walking up the stairs doing this, and, you know, I was sort of saying that, like, we have no plan for this. We talk about anything.
Yeah.
So this is after Hardy Bucks.
This is after Hardy Bucks. Yeah. The reason I wasn't in the Hardy Bucks movie, and wasn't so much in the RT stuff either, was because I had the heart attack. I was on the way to the movie, and I had the heart attack about 3 months before the movie was about to be shot.
Where did you have a heart attack? Like what?
In the heart.
Fuck off.
No. It was... Literally, I just wasn't feeling well. I hadn't been feeling well for ages. And I hadn't been feeling well for ages, but this particular day I was feeling particularly rough. And the evening before, actually, I just happened to be in a pub, believe it or not. And I hadn't been drinking. I was that sick, I wasn't even drinking. And this old fella came up to me. He said, "Stephen," he said, "I've been noticing you over the last couple of weeks." He said, "You've lost an awful lot of weight awful quickly." And he said, "If you don't mind me saying, you look like shit." And he said, "You need to get to a doctor." And the next morning, I was like, "I have to go to a doctor. I'm just not feeling well." Went in, and my usual doctor was actually out sick himself, but he had a locum doctor in. And it was a lady, and she, as soon as she took my blood pressure, she said, "You're not going anywhere." She said, "You are actually having a heart attack here. Like, it's your heart is just slowing down. Your blood pressure is 240 over 160, which is double top, double bottom." She said, "I couldn't understand how I hadn't had a stroke
right
at that stage." And she said, "You're not leaving here until you're going in an ambulance."
Now imagine if you, like, tried to track that old guy down to say thank you, and then he didn't exist.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
He definitely existed.
And then, so were you guys just about to make the movie then at that point?
Yeah, it would have been 3 or 4 months later on. But obviously I was about 13 days in ICU in Castlebar.
So you were fit as a fiddle right up to this point?
No. You see, it was because of the heart attack, I started getting fit again. I was never into running. I couldn't run the length of myself. Until I started after I recovered from the heart.
Because I would imagine you have a heart attack, you're basically told to, like, slow everything down.
No,
you know,
exercise. I remember going to the doctor consultant in Galway, and it was, change your diet, which I knew I had to do anyway. Maybe not go out partying as much. I was doing a lot of partying. get rid of cheese. Cheese was the main thing. Just, cheese was out.
Pints of cheese out the window. Yeah.
That was my biggest disappointment, actually.
Did you go cold turkey, or were you like going down the like Derry Lee or anything?
I had to go cold turkey on the cheese just for a little bit. But it eventually found its way back again. Same with the pints as well. But definitely the fitness I took up straight away.
When you guys were making Hardy Box in those early days, was there like, was that a big party culture?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's basically, it was art imitating real life. You know?
So you guys were able to like maybe have a session and have a load of pints, and it was just being filmed?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, basically, especially the YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
I remember there's a scene in just the YouTube, it was the Drink is a Curse,
of course,
episode. And I as part of it where I'm dancing on a fire, I'm actually in the middle of the woods and I'm dancing on a fire. I'm actually dancing on the fire. And that's pure drink.
Right.
Pure drink. It's just drink fueled. It was only meant to be filming during the day, but it just continued throughout the night. And Tom Kilgallen, who plays Boo, tries to get up in my shoulder and he falls back and he falls into the fire with his head. Right? Yeah. So at nighttime before, that was the last scene of the nighttime. And he's perfectly fine. Next thing in the morning scene, he has a big burn on his forehead where he actually really got burnt.
I remember when and where I first saw the show, way back in the YouTube days.
Yeah.
And this is kind of even before, I think when something like that goes viral nowadays, your phone will basically tell you about it.
Yeah.
But this is back in the day where it was word of mouth. You needed a friend to
100%.
Go. 100%. Maybe you'd see a share on Facebook or something, but I remember seeing some stuff on Facebook.
That was even pre-Big Fish. It was Bebo. It was Bebo that got big.
What year are we talking?
2007, 2006, 2007. That was the Mitzi Turbo Cup. That was the big episode for the Storyland for RT. That was the competition.
Yeah. So I think I was like 18, 19.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect age for it.
Me and my mate Stevie were at my dad's house, and it was I remember watching it on the PC, loading up the PC. People don't know it. They're putting petrol in it, and I was getting it fired up. And we watched. I said to him something like, I want to see an episode of this, because there were short episodes, weren't they? Like,
yeah.
8 minutes, 10 minutes.
That was the thing. They couldn't be more than, I think it was 9 minutes.
Right.
9 minutes. I think it was a huge, was there a limit on YouTube?
Yeah.
I think there was at one stage. Yeah. I think maybe 9 minutes was the length that you could put up on YouTube.
And we watched that first episode and then watched every single episode straight after. And I think that was when I'd started getting interested in filmmaking and performing and acting. And it was like bittersweet watching it, because it's something you just wanted to be a part of.
Yeah.
I was like, you could tell how much fun you guys were having.
Oh, but it was pure fun.
And I think I was able, because I was doing stand-up then, so I think I was able to notice that. I think a lot of this is improvised. I could tell it was like a loose script.
Not a lot of it. All of it was.
Right.
You'd have an idea. Mark Maloney and Chris Tardoff, who played Eddie Durkin and the Viper, they had ideas on it.
Right.
But after that, it was you're left out in your own devices.
Yeah, and it just, I mean, you talk about things being quotable. Every 2 minutes, there was a line or something that you would then say to your mates. And when other people, because I think in the North, at the time, not everyone knew about the Hardy Box. So when you found someone who also watched it, oh, what about this episode? Remember this bit in Mitzi Turbo Cup? Obviously, Mitzi Turbo Cup is one of the best episodes.
Everyone always says the Mitzi Turbo Cup was the best episode. It was just loose. It was us being ourselves. And it's funny, I landed in that morning and Martin told me to wear. I said, what'll I wear? I didn't know what was going on. Martin met me a couple of weeks earlier after he was doing Interrail and out in Europe. And Martin was always on about he was going to make this, he was going to make it big. And he'd always dreams. But when you get to 17, 18, you're thinking, this lad is off his head. This is never going to happen. Then he came back. He said, remember that all that stuff we were writing when we were younger, or the ideas that we had? He said, we're going to make it happen in a few weeks. He said, you know, I'll be in contact. Didn't hear from him about 2 or 3 weeks. Got a phone call And like that as well, it was no, the phones were,
yeah,
it was just normal phones. There was no smartphones at the time. Be at the community centre tomorrow at whatever time. He said, bring your Jeep and your trailer. It was actually my Jeep and my father's Jeep and trailer that the boys were going around. Yeah. And I said, what'll I wear? He said, wear, he said, the crazy stuff that you have. And I was just after coming back from America and I had bought myself a pair of leather trousers. Do not ask me why. I have no idea. I thought I was the reincarnation of Jim Morrison for a while. I had this big fascination with Jim Morrison. Got these leather trousers. I was absolutely swimming in them. I actually wore them. I actually wore them at an Alan Clark, doing a bit of a sketch for Alan Clark at one of his shows a couple of weeks ago as well. They've stood the test of time.
Right, yeah. Quality trousers.
Yeah. Wilson leather. Brought the leather trousers.
Is there an arse to them or not?
No. There is an arse to them, yeah. They're not arseless chaps. Although it has been mentioned a few times. Right. I used to get great attention in them.
Yeah?
Just the wrong type of attention. I remember wearing them to a night out in Galway. It didn't end the way I was. But yeah, I bring them in, he said, and I had no idea what was going on. He's, next thing,
had you acted up before
not
this?
Not at all. Or? Not at all. This was just us having the crack.
How did you guys all know each other?
We were all school friends.
Right.
School friends. Martin was born in Liverpool,
yep,
but his parents were from Swinford, or aka Castletown. And he always had these dreams. He was mad. And he's actually, I'm going to meet him this evening. He's in Dublin.
Great.
So he's came on tour with us to America. I've gone out to Stockholm with him trying to do a bit of filming. That was an experience in itself.
Yeah.
He's just he has ADHD, but he's so creative with it.
Right.
He's just insane. You could go out with Martin and you could go for a quiet pint with him and you mightn't come back for 3 days and no sign of Martin.
Right.
But you found yourself, he has got you into all this stuff. And
right.
Next thing, he's disappeared altogether. So, and you could be with a busload of people that you've never met before because of Martin.
Right.
And
but
then
when like the if we call it like that YouTube era of episodes of Hardy Books, how many did you guys make before they started would you film an episode, put it out on YouTube, do another episode, put it out on YouTube, or was a lot
it'd go up one at a time,
so you got to see the reaction to it almost in real time?
Yeah,
because that's interesting.
And
as well,
and sometimes the most fun was, I do you know what the funny thing is, I never watched much of the RTE stuff, and there's a reason for that too. We'll get into it. But the YouTube stuff, it was more fun watching it being made, being there and then.
Yeah.
And like this, the characters, French Toast, Peter Cassidy, who's also with me in Three Books Left, my best friend, Martin Maloney, Eddie Durkin, Owen Colligan played Buzz, Salmon.
But here's the great thing about every character. Is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Every character's quotable.
Yeah.
There's not a character, you know, if you watch a sitcom nowadays, you're like, I like that guy.
Yeah.
It's everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody has something about them. Everyone has a great line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just, and the fact that, you know, you're just childhood mates, it felt like from the outside, everyone had been cast perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, how many people did they need to speak to before they found the Viper or they found this character?
Yeah. No, the Viper and Martin they connected because, again, Chris Turdoff, the Viper, he was from Liverpool and he came in at the same time as Martin did. And Martin used to get a bit of hassle because of his accent. I thought he was the coolest dude ever. We got on so well.
Because he has the thick Liverpool
thick
accent.
Liverpool accent, which shocked
people.
And
that blew my mind. Yeah, the first time I met him, because I met Chris years ago in Belfast, a friend of his put us together and we had a coffee. And we chatted about things we just never got round to it.
Yeah.
Fizzled out. But I couldn't believe the accent thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're saying he would have got hassled for that?
And I suppose
this notion of what, you're not really Irish kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of a bit like that. And he was different. He was ahead of his time, even at that age. He was talking about intergalactic. He has this thing wrote, I forget the name of it, and it's such a shame. But it is so far out there. If you ever read it, it's just mental. It's mind bending, and it's probably too advanced for TV.
For taste, right.
Yeah, yeah. It's just crazy, but it's brilliant at the same time. Just only some minds would be able to get it. Chris is very similar, the Viper as well. He'd be very similar mind as well. Some of the stuff that they see and can project in their heads is just incredible.
And that, I suppose, that process is you guys all trust in that.
Yeah.
And go,
yeah,
he thinks this is going to be good.
Yeah.
So let's just go,
yeah,
with it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is improvised, like, you know, there can be some scenes, right? You guys are sitting in a house and there's 10 of you there. And people are delivering lines that I know for a fact from the stuff that me and Michael used to shoot in college. I was so bad for corpsing. So how can you even get through a day of shooting? Because this, especially the fact, if it's in a script, you know that line's coming.
Yes.
You'll find it funny, but you've read it. But if someone's coming up with stuff off the top of their head.
Just, well, that was it. And I think that added to it and also sometimes made it difficult to film as well, because One of the episodes, this is a perfect example, one of the episodes in that we were filming for RT spent a full day and a full night. It was meant to be the opening episode of the second season. It was myself and Kevin McGarren, and all the boys were around at this pool table, and they were meant to be sending me away to America on a wake.
Yeah.
And they were giving me the Irish goodbye. You know, they had me laid out and pennies on me.
Yeah.
And it went on for ages. But Kevin McGarren was coming up with something different every time we'd done a take.
Yeah.
And he'd catch people off guard.
Yeah.
And I was meant to be, like, I was meant to be playing dead for the first few minutes of it. And you just couldn't, because yeah, he'd say something completely off,
yeah,
off the charts altogether. And the sound guy, the filming crew, someone will chuckle.
Yeah.
So it took absolutely hours to film. But eventually we got to it. Then we'd done the nighttime scene. Spent the full day, the full night, and the next day. RT, I was telling everyone about this episode. Can't wait for this episode. RT never showed a second of it. And this wasn't the first time that it happened. And I was like, that's it, I'm out.
I want to talk, yeah, about that, because I've had brush with that kind of thing, but not to the level you guys did. But to go back to, like, the fact you shoot an episode, it goes out, you shoot another episode, the momentum and popularity as that's picking up, would that change the way you'd film it, or did it make it more difficult to shoot it? Because would you have, you guys are trying to do a scene out in town.
Yeah.
Would you have people in the background wanting to interact?
The great thing about Swinford is they say you'll never be a prophet in your own land, and that's typical of Swinford.
So nobody gives a fuck.
No one gave a shit. Not two Highland flings.
Yeah.
No, not a fuck did the people of Swinford. And they still don't.
Right. Like,
they still don't.
They're not cashing in on it.
No. And they should have.
Oh, yeah.
They should have majorly. Because people came from America. Even when I set up the Three Bucks Left page, people came from America to see myself and Pete. Or to come and see the cottage, even though it, unfortunately it got burnt down last year.
And that was the thing as well. Me and my mate Stephen, we watched it. We assume Castletown was a real place, you know.
Yeah.
It was a real place.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it is Swinford, but it's the thing is, there's so many Castletowns in Ireland.
Yeah.
It's about, I think it's 20 something.
Right.
So every time you go through, you see a sign for Castletown. It's a memory of,
yeah,
awesome. But it is Swinford. But Swinford never, like, I don't know what it was.
No sign when you drive in.
Nothing. No, in fact, if you mention Hardy Bucks, they just don't. They pretend not to know anything about it.
It's like Area 52.
Yeah. No, but even now we do a bit of filming. I done a day's filming with Alan Clark for his live show, and it goes on. It's about 13 minutes long, and it's nearly like the old type YouTube Hardy Bucks episodes in itself.
Right,
it's very good. We haven't released it online yet because it's still part of the show.
I just don't think it gets better than that. Like, when there's no real pressure, you're filming something with your mates, you can be loose with the script,
and no one cares. Like that as well. We filmed for the full day. No one batted an eyelid. I was up on the bridge looking down, shouting down to the town. People walk past. Not.
Ireland's probably the only place you get away with that.
Yeah.
You're in London filming something or whatever. You know, it's a huge thing. People want to get involved with it. Yeah. And what reaction were you having at the time? Because, this is like Bebo days, early Facebook days. Like, did you start to notice a time where people were coming up to you in the shop?
Not as much me, but I know the other lads got a lot. Like, I was always working around Mayo. I was very busy. I was a plasterer by trade. And I think I had one of my kids at that stage. So I was busy. So, but the lads would have definitely noticed it. I know Pete went off to Australia for 6 months after all the YouTube, after Hardy Bucks had won the Storyland competition. He went off to Australia for 6 months, didn't really, he wasn't a social media guy, he still isn't. That's why I'm always doing the videos and that, and he just does the live shows. Absolutely hates social media. He came back after 6 months, came into Dublin Airport. As soon as he came off the plane, everyone was shouting his name, quoting his quotes. He had no idea about any of this.
Yeah.
Hadn't a clue. It was all new to him.
Right.
He said he couldn't get out of the airport.
Right.
Yeah, it was just mental. And Owen then went off and done his own thing. He would have found the same thing, especially when he made his own page and everything like that as well. So, yeah.
And then when it became a series on RTE, was that them kind of being like, well, we want a piece of this? Was it pitched to you guys as like, you can still keep doing your own thing, but it's going to be on our channel? Or did you know from the outset that they were going to be more?
Everything had to be through nearly RTE. I know from the lads, like I said, I was at that stage, I had pulled myself away from it altogether. Because I was sick of going in and spending so much time, and time is what I didn't have.
Yeah.
And so sick of going in, spending so much time filming and it not being shown, and I'd give up telling people that I was even involved in it at all. And the only way I actually got back into it, I was a satellite character then, whenever it suited me or whenever they could fit me in, you know, I went in and done it for Martin more than anyone. He was a very good friend. And then I didn't get back into it until the lads started doing the live shows. And the first few of them, they'll say that to themselves, were absolutely atrocious. They were a car wreck.
I was booked for a festival. It might have been in Edinburgh or Glasgow. And it was like a weekend long thing.
Mm.
It's just an Irish comedy thing. It might have been around Paddy's Day. And I was doing stand-up at it with a few mates. And the Hardy Bucks live show was part of that festival.
Yes.
And I didn't see it, but I was talking to... It might have been Owen or someone. I was talking to a few lads at the time.
Yeah.
We're staying in the same hotel or whatever. And I just, such a huge Hardy Bucks fan. And I was like, are you just looking forward to the show? And I remember them being like, we have no idea what the show is.
Yeah.
We're just having a few pints.
Did no plan.
And exactly.
No plan. And you need a plan.
With so many people on stage at once as well.
Yeah.
So,
Carrick.
I remember, because I was like, this is going to be the slickest live show. It's going to be mapped out. But I suppose if you come up together winging everything and being like, in front of the camera, but in front of an audience, that
doesn't work.
Where was the first line? Do you remember where the first line was?
I have no idea. The lads had gone off and doing their own thing at that stage. I heard some atrocious stories that how bad the show was. At one stage, they thought they'd add to it by walking on with no clothes on.
Right.
no clothes on. All of them.
Right.
And they thought this was a good thing. And when it didn't work,
You should do the Devonish in Belfast. Someone stole their idea.
Unfortunately, they might not have been as well endowed as...
Yeah. I don't think anybody's as well endowed as those guys.
Yeah, that was crazy. Can you imagine being told you were going to a strip club and then walking into that?
As I said to my friend... I don't know if there was a big show element to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The show element didn't seem to be there for that definite show. No. You know, if you'd gone expecting a show, you weren't
weren't getting a show, yeah.
No.
No, 100% not.
Yeah.
Maybe they were at a Hardy Bucks earlier show.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a car wreck. And I went to a couple of them then. They started back again. They had a couple of attempts at it. And then they'd get a notion again where they'd go on the road. And the first few of them I went to... just to support them. They'd done a few in the Bowery in Rathmines in Dublin. Again, the first one was okay. Then they started to get loose again. It was, it was more a drinking session than going on stage. And you need a plan on stage. I don't care how good you are. You have to have some sort of a plan.
Yeah.
And you can have the 10 of the best comedians in the entire world. If they have no plan up there together, it's going to be messy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it was. So then they went away again. That would have been 2018. And they came back. Martin went off and he wrote a bit of a sketch. And I came up to Belfast, actually. And I forget the name. It could have been The Limelight.
Mm-hmm.
that they'd done this first show and it was brilliant. And I actually thought, do you know what, I want to be part of this. And the next show was Vicar Street in Dublin. And Martin said, I'll write you into it. Went on stage. My first stage performance was in Vicar Street in Dublin. So you can imagine the buzz that I got.
Yeah,
off
of course.
After that, I thought, this is the only thing I want to do for the rest of my life.
Right.
100%. To walk out to a full house in Vicar Street is crazy.
The Hardy Bucks fans probably love that too, because the fact that you were just here and there for a long time in it, you know. Because if you're investing in, you get invested in every character, so then to see characters back in it after a while, the audience probably loved it.
Loved it, yeah. No one loved it any more than me, and I just got the bug for doing live stand-up or a show or a comedy and the whole works. And then, unfortunately, we'd done a few more shows then after that with the Hardy Bucks. So then I thought, I knew it was only going to be a 6 or 7 show, you know, stint. Everyone was gone off doing their own thing. Owen was doing his thing. I think Martin went off and done his thing. Martin would have kept it going, but when Owen pulled out, he sort of lost the love for that particular show.
Yep.
So then myself and Pete said we wanted to do our own thing. And that's when I set up the Three Bucks Left page. Set it up with Mikey as well, Mikey Salmon. But I suppose the live show just didn't suit Mikey. With the character that he played on the show, that's Mikey.
Yeah,
that is Mikey. There's no acting there. That is 100%. So for anyone that knows the show, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And the thing is, 1 out of 10 shows, he could be absolutely brilliant. Mikey could be unbelievable, and then but there was 9 of them. Then he was just there.
Right.
But because the Hardy Bucks were still relevant, a little bit relevant, he'd get away with it because people knew his character.
Yes.
But the bigger the Three Bucks Left got, people were coming for me instead of the Hardy Bucks, and then the Hardy Bucks crowd sort of drifted away.
Yep.
And Mikey wasn't as relevant anymore, so people didn't have a clue who he was. Then of course he got married, so he went off for a little bit, and me and Pete had about 10 shows, and this is a funny story. Me and Pete had about 10 shows done while he was gone, and we had the show really tight at this stage. So then when he came back from his he went out for a honeymoon in Mexico. And I shouldn't be telling tales about him, but it's just so funny. If Pete was here, he
we'll keep it between us.
Yeah. he came back and he said he wanted to do a show, and I said, that's great. So we were like, where will we fit him into this new show that we have? So we thought we'd put him on straight away, just like he always did, went out. And Mikey had this thing where if the pressure was coming on, he'd grab a pint and he'd scull it off the top of his head. And that used to get the biggest roar of the night sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that's how easy pleased some of these crowds were.
Yeah.
And he'd get the biggest shout out. So I said, Mikey, I said, go out, do a few minutes. He said, no, he said, I want to do 20 minutes. And we're like, has marriage changed him this much?
Yeah.
You know, he wants to do 20 minutes and that was fine. Pete said, 20 minutes? Okay, fair enough. So we eventually agreed to let him go on out and on opening the show. And I kept saying to him, Mikey, if you go out there and feel the pressure, don't be afraid to cut it short. And if you have to go for a pint, I said, have a pint lined up or whatever you want. He said, no. He said, I won't need to do that. I won't need to do that tonight. And the new wife was there as well. She's a lovely girl. Was there as well. So I thought, this is new Mikey, new confidence.
Yeah.
Mikey goes through the crowd. And straight away you could tell only about half the people knew him, and they were all on one side. It just is like they were split down.
Like a wedding?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was the Hardy Bucks, and then there was people that hadn't a clue about the Hardy Bucks. So Mikey goes up, and straight away, just no talk, right? After this big build-up, and I felt so bad for him. And he kept telling us he was going to do in 20 minutes. And French George is a lovely guy. He came back down to me and we were watching him from the green room, and next thing he just
blanked.
He just complete crickets. You could hear crickets in the background. So he does the usual thing. He grabs a pint, but he grabbed it from the wrong side. he grabbed it from a table right up the front, but on the wrong side where they didn't know who he was.
Right.
So they actually thought he just stole his drink. Right. Stole their drink. And he downs the drink anyway. And you could tell that the table were, they were like, what the fuck? And that was it. And I got no reaction. And we thought, oh my God, he's going to make fun of that now. And no, he went for another pint. And he downed that one again. So again, there was no reaction. And then he goes, well, he said, this isn't going as I planned or something like that. And then he asked for French Toast to come back out. And French Toast, he denies this, but he definitely done it. He cracked the door open. He goes, I know, Mikey, you have another 17 minutes left. Now, he denies he said that, but he definitely did. But that was my, and then Mikey never done another
20 minutes
live show.
Can be a long time.
Yeah.
People think it flies by, but honestly, 20 minutes can be plenty.
If it's going well, 20 minutes is nothing. If you're working up there, then 20 minutes is a long time.
That's what I always say to, like, you know, someone getting into stand up or new to stand up, and there's this feeling that they have to jump to the longest set possible as quickly as possible.
Yeah,
and you're sort of saying you gotta enjoy. See, when you're doing 5-7 minutes,
yeah,
there's nothing more fun.
Yeah.
Because you come out, short time, audience want more, you're gone. Yeah. And they're going, I wanted that guy back or that girl back.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, when you jump up, and I've definitely done it where I've jumped up before and I just didn't have the material for it.
Yeah.
And you're stretching, you know, you maybe have a 10-minute set that you're stretching out over 20 minutes with filler. You know, just gradually moving up is the way to do it.
Yeah, 100%.
So let's then talk about the heart. So, is it during these live shows that you have that issue?
With the Hardy Bucks?
No, sorry, with your heart? With
yeah,
your,
no, no, I know. From the Hardy Bucks. I had the heart, no, it was actually before that. It was 2016, I had the... No, that sorry, that was the aneurysm. That was my apologies. The heart was 2000 and before that, way before that. It was would have been before the live shows as well. So,
and did that, like, were you working? Were you plastering then?
Yeah, plastering then as well. And then I was, then the bust kind of happened. The plastering, the construction had just fallen out of things. And I actually went working in Aldi.
Right.
So I did kind of after I was recovering from the heart attack. And it was the best 5 years that I ever put in. Working for someone, the discipline that Aldi have is just incredible. It's like I was
were you out on the shop floor.
Yeah, out on the shop floor, yeah.
So
yeah,
and
everywhere in Aldi, there's no you're doing everything. Even the manager is doing exactly what you're doing.
When someone would notice you, would they sometimes think it can't be?
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Again, it was in Claremorris and Mayo. Mayo people won't let you above your station.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, unless you're. The TF is the hardest place to sell in the entire country, especially for Mayo people. And it's unless you're Daniel O'Donnell or Tommy Tiernan, you're not selling out the TF.
Right, right.
So to sell out two TF shows this year or last year was just incredible. But no, Mayo people wouldn't generally come up to you much at all. It was actually, it would be people coming into the town that wouldn't recognise you more.
And then, so you'd never been into fitness and then all of a sudden, I suppose, yeah. I mean, I'd be similar in a way in that, so I have Crohn's disease. And when I got diagnosed with that, that was like, I'd have played football, like soccer for years and years. But then I started to think, there's a difference in just playing every week and actually getting fit and healthy.
Yes, yeah.
So now I have such a big emphasis on health and fitness, especially when I came back from Australia yesterday.
Yes.
And we were there for 10 days and it's got to be like eating right for me.
Yeah.
I'm having the old takeaway, but exercise.
That's great.
I
need to get back into that as well. I've lost that over the last 2 or 3 months. I usually would eat healthy. I know that I drink creamy pints and whatever, but I do actually try and dilute them in.
But you seem to go from not to do ultra marathons and all that kind of thing as someone who doesn't have a background in athletics or...
Yeah, no, I've nothing. As I said, until the heart happened, I couldn't run the length of myself. I was actually not a bad footballer. I just wasn't fit. I couldn't run the length. Yeah. Give me the ball, I'll put it over the bar, no problem. But I could not run the length of myself. And then I got into fitness. I started off, I could only do 500 metres. Then it was 1 kilometre, then it was 3 kilometres, then it was 5 kilometres. A bit like extending your time on stage for stand-up.
Exactly.
Keep doing it, keep building up to it. Then I was at 5K, then I was at 8K. And then I was a couple of years just doing between 5 and 8K races, runs and that sort of thing. Never in the top 10 or 20 even, but up there, mediocre. And then I decided to go up to 10K. I'd done my first 10K race And that's when I had my, that's, I remember thinking, I'm in a flow here. My life was in a flow. I had kids, and but the relationships didn't work out. And I was in a new relationship. I was in a good job in Aldi. I was fit. I was enjoying life. I was partying as well, but not as much as I'd used to.
Yep.
And done my 10K race. Then that's when I got hit with the aneurysm. You know, the fittest day I ever was. I remember thinking it was the fittest day that I've ever been in my life.
Yep.
And that night I had a bleed in the brain.
What did that look? Was that like straight to hospital sort of thing?
Well, I was gone. I was out. That was 2016, and the reason I know it was 2016 was it was the week of the centenary of the 1916 Rising. It was Easter weekend as well, and lucky enough, I had two mates over in the house, and we were watching a movie. The girlfriend at the time had gone down to a funeral in Cork, and the two lads came over. I said, "Do you know what?" I said, "I'm actually particularly tired this evening." I said, "I don't fancy going out." They said, "We'll come over." Went over, started to watch the movie, and I just said, "Lads," I said, "you belt away there." I said, "I'm just going to lie down." About an hour later, they said I got up. I was just in my shorts coming down the stairs. They could see me coming down the stairs, but halfway down, my eyes just closed and I just fell forward. Where I'd had a headache, and that was it. Went down the stairs and just fell forward. And the next day, I woke up in Beaumont 3 days later, Beaumont Hospital in Dublin.
Is that brought on by, were they able to say, this is the reason for, like, anything specific was the reason for?
No, it happened. Just, it happened. I had fractured my skull 12 years earlier. But again, they don't know if that was anything to do with it. But I woke up, I had been brought to Castlebar. They had read me my rites, my last rites in Castlebar. The priest had came down, you know, my family had notified, they said good luck to me. Castlebar had got an email to say, send him up to Beaumont, we'll see what we can do. Went up and they saved my life. It was an actual Scottish surgeon that worked on me. Daniel Rowlock was his name, an absolute gentleman, absolute genius, and saved my life, basically.
Did you, when you recovered from that, did you have like a, because you know if that happens in a movie, the character has that big moment of realisation of, I should have been doing this and I'm motivated to go do that.
Oh, that's when I was like, I'm going to, from now on, I'm just going to, I have an awful habit of trying to keep everyone happy, mm-hmm. and not keeping anyone happy.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? I'm trying to be all things to all men.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's sort of, and sometimes I still do it, but back then I was terrible for it, putting probably a lot of stress on myself as well. And I thought that was going to change. If I'm going to do anything anymore, it's going to be, I'm going to do it right instead of half-arsing things mm-hmm. all the time. And I'm just going to start doing things that I want to do as well. And that's, again, where the stand-up came in.
I was going to say, would that have then coincided with the time around? Because then I started, was that around the time I would have started seeing you a lot more in videos on the likes of Instagram and things like that?
About a year, yeah, maybe a year or two later. Where I really kicked off was when lockdown happened and COVID happened.
Right.
Myself and Pete started to do things on her own, who played French Toast. Then I remember having this particular rant, and I left the phone down for 15 minutes, came back, and my phone had exploded.
It's just you talking to camera, yeah, like just, a piece to camera.
Just, yeah, instead of just trying to keep it simple, as you'll see in a lot of my videos, they're just pure ranting. I don't do any editing or anything like that. It's just bang, straight up. Some of them are short, some of them are sweet, some of them are completely different. I'll just throw in, I have a thing where I do the creamy pint thing on a Friday usually, and then throughout the week it could become something completely different.
And did you then start getting tortured with people sending you pictures of their pints?
Yes.
And going like, what do you think of this, and rate my pint and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Because Guinness is its own world.
Yeah.
Like Guinness is, I'm like conflicted about it because I rarely drink.
Yeah. Right?
Like, don't get me wrong, a couple of nights ago in Auckland, last show of the tour, we had a private karaoke booth and I had two ciders, right? I don't mind telling you. which is not really like, I don't drink because of my condition, I don't drink very much.
Okay. I did not realise that you had that.
Yeah. As a result of my condition, I don't have gluten. So pints are just off the menu for me.
Okay.
And Guinness would have been my tipple.
Okay.
Pint of Guinness.
They've marketing is unreal with it. They've made it so photogenic.
Yeah.
The two part pour, which is a load of nonsense, and the Guinness brewers will tell you that themselves. they just made this, they've made an advertising team out of, for free.
Yeah, yeah. And the ads used to be the best ads on TV. Yeah. But were you talking about the £2 pour?
Yeah.
So we were talking about this earlier.
£2 pour, yeah.
That is just, we just accept that as science. And I remember the first time I went out to a bar for a drink and I was 16 and I ordered a Guinness thinking I was a man, and the barmaid pulled it like 3/4 of the way.
Yeah.
And I put money on the table and just like said thank you and lifted it. And she's like, no, no. And I remember someone explained, you have to let it sit and then you pour the rest. Yeah. And for my whole life, until Dan told me 10 minutes before this episode, I thought that was...
No,
I was
that like, you cannot
drink a Guinness, just put... But then, do you ever get anybody going into a bar going, just pour it all at once? Or
the funny thing is, I've never seen it. And I know that there's seasoned drinkers that if you've done a £1 pour, they'd send it back. Right. But it's all in the head.
Yeah.
It's all in the head.
But then I think so much of Guinness is in the head to the point where I'm going, Guinness is the drink that I would have drank. Like, if you tell me if my health wasn't an issue, and you're like, you can drink anything, pint of Guinness right now would be lovely, especially a creamy pint of Guinness.
But you're nearly drinking it before you put it to your lips. It's with your eyes.
I can taste it here, just there. I can taste it there.
And when I started drinking first, it was Guinness that I started drinking, and I liked that as well. I thought it was the big man drinking the pint of Guinness. I drank four of them one night, and then I went. Got brave, drank the fifth one off the head. That was the worst decision I ever made.
Yeah.
Couldn't drink Guinness then for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And the only reason I went back drinking Guinness was I couldn't even eat a Guinness stew. Even the smell of Guinness would make me heave.
Right.
So I went to the Guinness storehouse on a date. And we were going up and you get to pour your own pint.
Yeah.
And that's part of the tour. And then you can bring it up to the bar up top. Is it the gravity bar? And you can enjoy it there. And the lady that I brought with me, she had her pint poured and she wasn't drinking at all. So there I was with 2 pints of Guinness. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to try it. I fell in love with it again, all over again. And the rest is history.
Yeah. I remember being out with mates in Dublin maybe 5 years ago. And they're all drinking Guinness. And I'm going, I'm celiac, I can't have it. But then I went, I'm an idiot. I bet you there's bound to be gluten-free Guinness.
Yeah.
So I said to my mate, I can't remember where we were. I was like, I'm going to go up in Dublin. I was like, I'm going to go up and ask them if they do gluten-free Guinness. And I remember my mate's face totally changing. And he's like, if you fucking dare, if you dare ask somebody for that out loud, like, we're going home. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, you just can't do that. And I think you can get gluten-free stout somewhere, but like, people are so passionate, obviously, about Guinness, but it almost goes beyond that, where I think it's almost the whole idea of, like, the snobbery towards bad pints of Guinness, or even the idea, if someone posts up a picture of them drinking Guinness, you almost feel like there's a sense of people under it being like, you don't like Guinness? You know, people are so defensive about it because think it's a huge... I think it's a national identity thing.
Some of my videos that went viral were about just drink the fucking pint.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's a lyric in a Versatile song.
Okay.
Split the G, it's like just drink the thing.
Yeah.
Because
I called out the Guinness guru and people took it serious.
Right, right.
You know, and I was like, you wouldn't drink enough to wet a stamp. Yeah. You know, in the video. Just drink the pint of fuck.
Just drink it.
And we were actually very good friends, but he had a brilliant video back to me as well.
Right.
And then that started off the snowballing thing. And he came down to Swinford then, and we'd done a bit of a podcast. It turned out to be just a drinking session. And,
right.
But we made a couple of brilliant videos during the day. And then people were disappointed that it wasn't a real fight, you know.
Right, yeah. People were like, Guinness Guru, you should have fucking knocked him out.
It was the same thing, myself and Garen Noon. We thought to try and sell the big show in the TF last year, we thought we'd create a bit of rivalry online.
A bit of beef.
And it did. And it got so bad that Instagram told us to stop. Like, yeah. They give us warnings.
Yeah.
One of Garen's quotes was... he said, I'll go up to Swinford, and he lives in Ballina. He said, I'll go up to Swinford and I'll hit you with that many headbutts, you'll think you're surrounded.
Yeah. And Instagram's like, that's hate speech.
Yeah. But it was obviously, it was complete piss take.
But do you think with the Guinness thing, it's like, people are so defensive about it and so keen defensive. But do you think it's like a national identity thing? Do you think it's like an Irishness thing of
definitely?
I like Guinness more than you, therefore in a way I'm more Irish than you.
That is definitely it. And the thing is, Guinness will let you keep. Guinness never approached me. Not once has Guinness ever approached me. Never said thanks for doing all the videos. Yeah. In fact, they told me that they would never ever endorse any of my videos. The social media lady that I met at an opening in Galway of a bar that I was invited to open it up, and she happened to be invited as well. She said they're well aware of what you're doing. They're well aware of what the Guinness Guru is doing. All these people that use Guinness as like a prop or whatever, as a gimmick, they're well aware, but they will never ever contact you because you're doing the job for free.
Exactly.
So that's why. And then I went and done a video for Conor McGregor's stout, which I got into a lot of controversy over. And that was, you're on about filming in the city and everyone's wondering what you're doing. When I filmed that for Black Forge stout in Temple Bar, the guards had to come down and split the crowd. There was that many people gathered around.
Just trying to get in,
just trying to get in, take pictures, the whole works. His crew landed down in a Lamborghini and a pickup truck with forged out, like in big writing all over it.
Yeah.
And then the pickup truck, actually, your man had forgot to take the handbrake or put the handbrake down it, and it rolled back and into the back of the to the front of the Lamborghini. But anyway, that was a different thing. But went in the end, I had to actually go out into the key street to do the video. There was that many people around. You couldn't. There wouldn't.
I had a great pint of Guinness after. I have to get this in, supporting Kevin Hart in Dublin, just across from the Three Arena, the Ferryman. In the Ferryman bar.
Yeah.
Oh. But then I go, am I falling into this trap? Because sometimes you go, the Guinness is amazing. But, and then there's so many myths of like, oh, it's all about the distance of the keg from the pump.
Yeah, there's so many myths.
Is that all bullshit?
I don't know about the length of the line.
Yeah.
That could be a lot to do with it, but it's awful hard. It's nearly harder to get a bad pint than it is a good pint these days.
It's so much to do with the setting. Like, we got an Airbnb with friends of ours, and we took the kids away, Donegal, a few years ago, and it was a place called Coors Point, which is in the middle of nowhere in Donegal. It's in between two small towns. Coors, maybe look at up where that is for us, Dan. There's one bar. It's basically like 12 houses, and there's one bar, and it's the most, like, if you were making a, like, colloquial Irish little film, this is what it would be, because there's one bar, and there's a dog that lies out the front of it, and the owner's an old boy, and when people are walking up to the bar, the dog barks, it wakes him up, and he comes down to the bar and serves you.
Oh my gosh.
And this was during COVID, towards the end of it, and he's a real old boy, chats away to you, there's a few regulars in there, the place hasn't been done up probably since the 70s, and pulls two pints, and we get, of course, two packets of tomato, cheese and onion.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my mate Stevie, who was telling about watch the Hardy Bucks together first, we sit out there, and this view of the beach and the sun is unbelievable. And we drink our pints and both go, it's the best pint I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Now, is it because the Guinness there is amazing, or is it because
it's the setting as well, 100%.
So let me ask you a question then, a controversial question. Mm-hmm. We're getting a lot of shit for this.
Okay.
Is Guinness overrated?
No. No, it's not.
Is it something we shouldn't even think about? Because then we might start thinking it's yet.
I won't even allow myself to think about that. That's why I said no straight away.
But I mean, here's the thing. I can't have it anymore. I love the idea of it. As I say, I can taste it in my mouth.
It's a brilliant idea.
But is it the marketing? Is it the feeling of Irishness?
Yeah.
When
it's like love. Is it real?
I hope so.
Is it real? Is it all primal? No. You love to believe in it. You love to believe that and we've made that ourselves, even without Guinness's advertising.
Yeah, that's
that.
True.
This myth that this is the holy grail of all pints, and you're not a real man unless you drink Guinness.
Yeah.
Like, and that's why I do this thing where I make fun of rock show drinkers. It's made by the same company, in the same place.
Yeah. I tell you right now, you probably get this all the time. Here's where you need to go, you need to try. The Maypole Bar, which is also known as Ned's, is across the road.
Okay.
When you come for lunch with us, we'll walk past it.
Okay.
If a doctor came up to me and said, here's a tablet, you can have all the gluten you want for an hour, we'd have 2 pints of Guinness over there.
Beautiful.
Because the Guinness there is amazing. It's special.
I'll have a doctor outside now and about it.
Yeah. And they go as well. They go, there's another myth. People go, the best Guinness you get is Donegal, because like the Guinness in Dublin, it's too fresh. It's come straight from the brewery. When you get it in Belfast, it's travelled too long. Donegal, the perfect amount of time.
Oh, no.
It's such bullshit. But you believe it all, you go, fuck, I can't taste that.
Yeah. 100%.
That took 2 hours to get here, you know?
Dublin, some of the best pubs that serve Guinness that I've ever had.
Yeah.
Like Rhines's on Camden Street, Cassidy's, Devitt's, Stony Batter. I think it's Walsh's. You have the Gravediggers, the famous Gravediggers, Kavanagh's out in Glasnevin, Mulligan's. There's so many brilliant Guinness places. But in Ireland, your pub is judged off your pint of Guinness.
Definitely.
It's as simple as that. If you can't do a good pint of Guinness, you're wasting your time.
Yep. Honestly, Ned's here, like this place. But again, it's the setting too, because Ned's hasn't been done up in a long time. It's not modern.
Yeah.
It's an institution to stay. When all the American actors and crew come over here for the likes of Game of Thrones, they go there.
Yeah.
Because there's no, like, I was going to say there's nobody taking selfies. Brian, who owns it, has like a rule of like no mobile phones.
Okay.
So you could.
Did that pub feature in some sort of like a video, like a in Ireland video?
Possibly.
It's something.
But they're that like. The way they are, they wouldn't care about that.
Okay.
They're not into, like, of course they love it when people say nice things about it.
Yeah.
But it just kind of, they're not interested in, you know, I'm sure that, I'm saying they're not interested in awards. They'll be watching this being like, no, we would like an award. But I mean, it just, everything else changes.
Yeah.
Especially in this town, you know, new buildings come in and new chains open up or whatever. But the Maypole is just a thing that has always stayed the same.
Yeah.
And
I feel the same way about a pub in Swinford. It's Mellets, as it's called.
And there's just something so heartwarming about that, in that, like, you're not allowed to. You can have your mobile phone. You can send a quick text, no problem.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting on your phone watching a video, or you were on a phone call, get out.
No way.
You can't sing. No singing. Like, you can't start fucking sing along. Leave. Yeah,
that's weird.
No, you
think you'd encourage a bit of singing at the end of the night?
They'll have a TV for the sport games, but it's a small TV, and it's like, you know, just watch it, but just keep the tone down a bit.
Right.
It's a fucking brilliant institution of a place. It's even the way it looks, all the old pumps they have and the mirrors, you know, because so many places try and recreate that, don't they? You know,
of course.
Touristy type bars. Yeah. And that's what they're trying to...
Okay, just keep.
I'm going back on the gluten. Let's have 10 pints.
You've talked the two of us into it. 3 hours later, we'll be rolling out of the Maypole.
And for your live show, will you have a pint when you're doing your live shows? Will you have a pint of Guinness for your live show?
I use it as a prop. I have a whole thing about drinking pints and drinking Guinness. And
would you say you use it as a framing device?
A which?
Framing device.
What would you?
I don't know what a framing device is. It felt appropriate to use it in that sentence. Michael, what am I trying to say? Instead of making all people go, that's a framing device.
No fucking idea.
Dan, would you say Rose's necklace in Titanic is a framing device?
I wouldn't, but you might.
A plot device? I think that just came into your head.
Never mind. Use it as a prop.
Yeah. It's just like a segue into a couple of...
Segue.
A segue into right. a couple
a
of...
A vehicle.
Yeah, a vehicle. Yeah. A vessel, even.
Yeah, I like vessel the best. It's good.
So I have a whole thing about it because, I mean, I have to mention it. It's half why the page is as big as it is.
And by the way, the page just blows up, and we have a mutual friend. We both have a close personal friend in Jamie Dornan.
Yes,
your page?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah.
He's from this town too.
From this area, yeah.
From
Belfast.
From Hollywood. Come on.
Fair enough. Okay.
Where's the, like, before we jump back into that, where you're from, is there that thing where people call it a place nearby that's bigger and all the locals will correct you and be like, no, 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 it's, you know.
No.
Okay. Okay, so it's not a framing device or anything like that?
No, no, no. No, it's a prop. But it is a very good prop, and I come back to it every so often because I'm not going to give that gag away, but you'd have to come to a show for it. But it's a good one, yeah.
And as the so you're coming to Belfast, we'll talk about that because Black Box is such a good venue. Cool. Like Black Box, have you been there before?
I've never been to the Black Box. I've
middle of Cathedral
Black Box
Quarter
in Galway, but I didn't realise there was one in Belfast as well.
Yeah, it's middle of the Cathedral Quarter where everybody goes out on their nights out.
Very
so
nice.
Everybody knows it. And
very
even
nice.
If you think you don't know it, you do know it because it's beside the Heart Bar and Duke of York. And
yeah,
there's so many bars where you would get a lovely pint around there.
Yeah, I had one. Well, I was up here in Belfast. Last time I played in Belfast was with Farmer Michael, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I went to Cathedral Quarter, and I think pretty sure the Heart Bar. And
yeah, it's great around there.
It's great, yeah.
That's a friendly part of Belfast.
Yeah.
I mean, Belfast is a friendly
great
city,
night.
But, you know, tourists love that kind of night out, and locals too. But Black Box is where I did my first ever gig. First ever stand-up spot, five minutes, 18 years ago, whatever it was. But you'll love it, because that room, it is literally a black box. You know, it's a perfect venue for stage. Everybody has a great view of it. You see the audience really well. The bar there, great staff are always great. It's a perfect place for you
it's
to
cool.
be doing a show.
We could have gone bigger, but we just want to do Belfast and do it right, and do the whole north of Ireland right. We are going to be in Tyrone as well, Derry, Donegal. I'm just including like Ulster, really.
Yeah.
So we want to do it right. We've been up here before, and we just noticed that, as I was saying to the lads before we started this, Belfast people have a habit of buying tickets and then not turning up for a show.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell. And I would rather.
That's our bad.
Yeah. I think the last show we done, there was nearly 60 tickets sold that people didn't. And it wasn't a big venue either. You would know it has 60 people in it.
Yeah.
So I would much prefer to play it to a bigger crowd. The bigger crowd, the better the show.
See, our economy's booming again, so people are like, nah, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll go to that.
Yeah, so we want to do it, and we want full houses in all the venues. So that's going to start at the end of April, beginning of May. And the show is a lot of energy. I'm very proud of it. It is a lot of fun. French Toast involved. We try and bring someone along with us as well, a special guest. We've had Adam Kelly a couple of times, Two Big Lugs. He's only starting off, but it's nice to give him the 10, 12 minutes to at the beginning of the show. Gara Noon, I'm going to be doing a show with him and Cavan as well, so, and he might be involved in some of the other shows too, so we'll see how it goes.
So someone will come and do almost like a guest spot
where
they can do stand up or whatever, they try a character piece out or whatever.
Anything at all. It might even be a bit of music. If it was Garen, he's very funny, but his main thing is music. He's just unbelievable.
Well, we were saying before this, oh, by the way, we'll also, while it's in my head, we'll put a link to the tour in the description.
Cheers.
Of this show.
Thanks very much.
But there just seems to be this like explosion down south of people that are putting out this viral content.
Yeah.
And I almost don't think I saw that from, I think the comedy scene here, more the stand-up scene has been blowing up for a while.
Yes.
And down south, I wasn't seeing it as much, but it feels like now is the time we're there. People are just like, you're hearing about this person, that person, and that group of people are now starting to, you know, overlap and collaborate a lot more.
Yeah, 100%.
Which I think is the key to any good scene.
And the funny thing is, Mayo, where like it wouldn't be the biggest populated county, even though it's land-wise, it's one of the biggest in Ireland, but it has, in its own right, it has some brilliant content creators like Gara Noon, Alan Clark, ourselves. Whatever, there's some massive pages in it, and Garen just, and when the three of us came together to do the live shows, it was an easy.
But that's the best thing, is that almost goes back to the full circle for those YouTube Hardy Buck days of like, collaboration is the best thing when everyone's coming together. And
what's the saying? Rising tide floats all boats. So if we all go together,
I think a rising tide lifts all framing devices. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. But yeah, I mean, that's just the best thing.
Do you know what helps, and why probably Irish people do well online and Instagram on social media? Because still there's Irish people going off to Australia, America, Canada, back into the UK, and they still love to see things from home.
Definitely.
And they get sent off, and it all gets sent to Australia, and then it gets circulated in Australia, in Canada, in America. Yeah. I think Australia is... It's Ireland, England, and then Australia would be our biggest...
I mean, I've just seen it firsthand, last week. People are just so... They obviously miss home. They're having a great time there.
Yeah.
You see why people move as well when you're there. It's brilliant. But they miss home, and when you're... You know, I make sure that I could do my show to Australians, never mind just Irish people living in Australia. But when you have the odd reference of home, they love it. And people.
How do you find doing shows in other countries? I presume that a lot of people that would come to your show would have Irish background anyway.
You'll say in Australia, you would say who's from Ireland, and you would get 70-80% of a cheer.
Yeah.
And then the rest are locals, and then you've got another 5% of a lot of Scottish.
Okay.
And some English, bit of them, and then you have the odd random nationality. But and Australia was all like that, New Zealand was like that. But weirdly, on the America tour, there was a lot more like locals there. A lot more people going out to shows just to see stand-up. They don't necessarily know who I am.
There is a big market for that in America. We done shows in New York, Boston, and I done a show in Arizona as well. Loved it, absolutely loved it. But in Arizona, it was an Irish cultural centre.
Yeah.
In Boston, an Irish cultural centre, so you're going to get Irish people.
Yeah.
Same in New York. It wasn't Irish centres, but it was definitely heavily Irish crowd. But loved it. But I done a show in London. We done the Angel Comedy Club.
Yeah, done it. It's great.
It's beautiful, beautiful. It's not the biggest room.
Yeah.
But we went out and we sold out the first two nights, straight away, or not straight away. It takes a while. They're funny, but then they sold out, and they said it was particularly quick for that venue. So the Ashes, we do another show last minute. So we had sold out the Monday, Tuesday night. They do weird nights as well. And then they said, will we do the Sunday night? And obviously, the crowd that knew us had bought the tickets for the Monday, Tuesday night, and that was fine. So it was a crowd that really didn't know us.
Yes.
That was on the Sunday night. So the first night, and we were just after doing two sold out shows in Cork, got on a plane straight over. We were wreck tired.
And it's the diehard fans at the first ones.
Yeah, first ones. But it was the crowd people that really 50-50. Didn't know us. Yeah, 50-50 at the, because I remember French Josh went out and said, any Hardy Bucks fans in the house? And then it was just and then we knew we were in for a tough night.
Yeah.
Because at the time, a lot of the show was colloquially Irish.
Yeah.
So you would have to be, to get 80% of the show, you would have to be to know what we're talking about in Ireland.
Yeah.
So when we didn't have that, so after that I was like, I have to write a show that is
universal.
Has to be
heavily themed with home.
Yes, of course.
Because I think when you're talking about home, everyone gets that. You know.
Yeah. But unless you explain what you're going around and how you're going to deliver the joke and what it's about, which you don't have to do at home or in an Irish crowd, you don't have to explain the joke.
Yeah.
You know, where I've seen Tommy Tiernan tell Irish jokes, but he has a great way of explaining what it's about and how he's going to describe it. Yeah,
we'll put the link for the tour show, the Belfast tour show. We'll, if you have a link for all the dates here, we'll put that up.
Thanks,
And I'll try and get along with that live show because I'd love
brilliant.
To come.
Of course,
I've been a fan for a long time, so I'll come see that.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much for it's great to meet you. Not just coming to the podcast, but it's great to meet you.
Yeah,
we'll go for lunch.
Likewise,
and we'll have a nice time in.
Hollywood.
Yes.
I always said I'd make Hollywood. And we might even have a pint in the Maypole.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Cheers, Shane. Thank you.
Sipper, God love you. If you've made it all the way through this episode, that means you love Tea With Me, you love this podcast, or it means you've drifted off and you've just left this on play. Either way, what you need to do is head over to our Patreon. If you enjoy the podcast and you want more tea, that's where you go. We do a bonus episode called The Special Brew every Monday and a live stream podcast every Friday with some of your favorite comedians. You can chat, interact, ask questions. when we announce live podcasts, you get early access to tickets with a little bit of a discount on there, and there is so much more. You can go back and watch, I think, nearly 1,000 hours of content. Tea with Me Patreon, which is patreon.com/teawithmepodcast. The link is in the description. I'll see you there.